Best-selling author and American psychologist Mary Pfeiffer said this, "We live in a world filled with language. Language imparts identity, meaning, and perspective to our human community. Writers are either polluters or part of the cleanup team. Just as the language of power and greed has the potential to destroy us, the language of reason and empathy has the power to save us. Writers can inspire a kinder, fairer, more beautiful world, or invite selfishness, stereotyping, and violence. Writers can unite people or divide them." In this Book Show podcast, host, confidence coach Susan Axelrod asks women authors a simple question. Which kind of writer are you? She invites each guest to step into the confidence zone to proclaim how her book can inspire. If you are seeking inspiration to create your legacy, take out your pen and pad. Your book, My Time, starts now. Hello, friends. Welcome to this episode of Your Book, My Time. This is one of my Authors Who Inspire episodes, where I invite three writers to join me in one episode and take a few minutes to talk about their message, their mission, or whatever it is that they want to share. I do this because, as a published author myself, I was always looking for places to give voice to my message that was in me that I shared in my books. Today is the second episode that I'm offering you on the book for our time, Voices 19, Their Legacies Live On. This book was published by Brenda Cortez, and you may remember my other episode where I had a few other writers from that book. Today, I'm delighted to bring you three additional writers who are here to share the story of their loved ones lost to COVID-19. The first writer I'm going to introduce you to today is Rosie Davis. Rosie, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this podcast today.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for having me.
Rosie lost her mom, Mary, to COVID. And Rosie, I'm here with you today and inviting you to share any story you want about your mom. We can't wait to get to know her.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I guess I'll start. my name is Rosie Davis. I am the founder of Yellow Heart Memorial. I lost my mother, Mary Castro, to COVID-19 on May the 17th, 2020. My mother was in a nursing home when she contracted COVID. So the last day that I seen my mother alive was on Mother's Day of 2020. Nursing homes were completely shut down, so I could not go in to visit my mom. I had to see her through a window. So seeing my mother that day, I already knew that something was wrong with her. We were having to tap on the glass to get her attention, and her health started to decline through the days. And so on May the 12th, my mother was rushed to a local hospital. And because she was showing symptoms of COVID, they right away isolated her. My mother had three COVID tests that were all negative, and she was already admitted to the COVID floor, but everything else was showing that she did have COVID. Her O2 sats were dropping. She had COVID pneumonia in both lungs. My mom was a DNR, so the doctors asked me to consult with my mother to make sure that she did not want to be put on a ventilator. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of the hardest conversations I've ever had to have in my life, was to ask my mom, if we could put her on life support. And her response was no. She did not want to suffer, or she did not want to even take the chance to, you know, just to see what her life would be, even if she did survive. And so as hard as it was to hear that, I wanted to keep my mom here. I wanted to do everything in my power to save my mom. And I had to obey her wishes. And I told the doctors that my mom did not wish to be put on a ventilator. Me and my mom had several talks like this before. My mom battled. She had a leg amputated. She was in the very early stages of dementia. She had diabetes. And so I thought this was one of those conversations. And she said what she had to say to me. I said what I had to say to her. And, you know, the last words that my mom had spoken, she said, "When you get to heaven, we'll look for each other." Aww. And, you know, so I was very hopeful. This was on May the 16th. My mom was asking when she was going to come home and have the restrictions been lifted. And then I get a phone call the very next morning that my mom took a turn for the worst. The doctor says, "You need to start calling your family because it's not good." They tried to give my mom convalescent plasma. My mom did not live to receive the plasma. We were told that we were going to get a FaceTime with my mom to tell her goodbye, and that never happened. So my mom, you know, there was no official goodbye. We didn't get to see her. And because it was so early on, it was 2 months into the pandemic.
Yeah.
We didn't get the option to bury her or cremate her. You know, they made us cremate my mom.
I see. I just want to say, Rosie, thank you so much for sharing your mom's story and your family's story. And I really do want to acknowledge we're in the week of the anniversary. I realize as you're sharing the dates, we just had Mother's Day. You know, the day of her passing is coming up. And I just want to really, you know, if I were with you, I would wrap you in the biggest hug. I just want to, you know, send my love. Just take a minute or two to talk to us about Yellow Heart Memorial.
Yeah. So when my mom passed away, all we heard was numbers. That's all that we heard on the news. And so when my mom passed away, there was no community. There was no other people like me. And I felt alone. And the first thought that came to my mind was, how are people going to know how great my mom was, that she was a person and not this number that she's been given? So I quickly learned about the Yellow Heart in the UK, and it came over to the United States. But I wanted to do more. I didn't want to just have a symbol. I wanted people to know my mom's name. And when they seen my mom's name, to say it out loud. So I collaborated with Hannah Ernst, and we put the silhouettes and the hearts, and we started taking requests. My first memorial, we actually had over 2,000 hearts from across the world. And that's how Yellow Heart Memorial was born. And today we've had over 60 memorials all over the United States. We have 15 chapters all over the United States. We have five permanent memorials that are going up in different states. And so I'm just grateful for all the love and support in the community that we've built for people that are still losing to COVID.
Rosie, we're going to put contact information and whatever links you want into the comments.
Okay.
So that we can all together work to remember Mary.
Thank you so much.
I want to say thank you so much for being here with us today. I want to send you and your family members my love. It's not easy to come on and have these conversations, but it's necessary to share legacy in light.
Absolutely.
And to bring energy to the souls of our loved ones. So I want to say thank you so much, and we'll be sure to post those links. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
See you soon. Wow, these conversations are really amazing. I'm so happy to welcome Raynell Worrells. Hi, Raynell. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I know that you lost your brother, Tony, to COVID, and I really want to hear about him. Please share whatever you want to share.
Yes, so I did lose my oldest brother, my big brother, my only brother, and my only sibling to COVID. Before even Rosie and I knowing each other, on the same day that Rosie lost her mother. So my brother also passed on May 17th, 2020.
Wow.
So very early on in the pandemic. And experiencing some of the same things of us not being able to be there with him. I fortunately did have an opportunity to be able to Zoom into his room. My brother was in the hospital and when he died. And so his wife and myself were able to, see him and I guess essentially say goodbye, which ironically, when I did talk to him, that was just something that I said I didn't want to say to him. So I just said, I'll see you later. But it was difficult. Not having any of the options to be able to try to help him because it was so early on in the pandemic, it was really, I just kind of felt like it was just really nothing to do but to watch them go.
Yeah, and I honestly feel like I'm so happy that you joined the Voices 19 crew. I know Jean Syme is watching and cheering us on, and she was instrumental in bringing a lot of people together. And I feel like it was so good for you to have the opportunity to share a story. Tell us a story about Tony.
Tony was like the typical big brother. So we were 6 years apart, and in growing up as kids, it seemed like a large age gap. As we got older and became adults, the gap didn't seem such a big, like he's that much older than me.
I know how that is.
And it was quite nice because then we could relate to each other as adults more so, even though, yes, he was still my big brother. But we were able to relate to each other more as adults. But my brother, he just was fun loving and he was a big kid. He was really a big kid at heart. And he loved to spend time with his family, all family, his children, our cousins. We come from a very large family. Our mother was one of 10 children, so we have a lot of cousins.
Oh, wow.
And we grew up with a lot of cousins and things. So we came from a big family, and that was just something too, as a family, that we always did a lot of things as family. And so that was just something that was important to my brother. I apologize. Someone's trying to call me. important to him. And then as he had his own family, that was important too. So we did a lot of things together as a family, and my brother loved sports. So, he would get together with my cousins and play basketball, baseball, softball, tennis, even golf. They gotten into playing golf. So it was just, always into that.
Let me ask you, tell me about Tony's kids.
So my brother has two children. He has a daughter. She's actually 30 years old now, and she's married, and she has a daughter, a two-year-old, and she's actually has another one on the way. Unfortunately, my brother never got to meet either of his grandchildren because his my niece's daughter was born literally right at the shutdown. And they lived in different states. So he never got a chance to meet his granddaughter. But she's 2 years old now. She looks a lot like him. And she's wonderful. And one thing is I spent a ton of time with my niece and her daughter, and then my brother's son, who's 18 now. He was 16, 15, going on 16 when my brother died. He's getting ready to graduate from high school. And yes.
Yay. Congratulations.
My brother would be so proud of him. Even, you know, his daughter with her family. And so I spent a ton of time with them. That was one of the last things I told to my brother, was that I will make sure that your children are okay.
Oh my God, I keep touching my heart right now. I just keep touching my heart, you know, feeling this, you know, through you, you know, sending love to your brother's children, grandchildren, and really, you know, it's so beautiful. I have wondered about the situation where people, you know, had to look on a Zoom camera, you know, to say goodbye to their loved ones. And you just helped us to understand. And, you know, you're here speaking on behalf of, honestly, I can't say thousands, countless others about how it felt, where you said, I couldn't say goodbye.
Yeah, I will tell you, it was difficult. I mean, I think it was difficult, just as difficult as being there with the person. I don't know. I at times I've had feelings where it was even worse, because I still just did not like, and it just still, I don't think it'll ever sit well with me that I feel like my brother died alone. You know, unfortunately, my brother's death was not the first experience with, you know, having a loved one die. Our mother passed in 2008 from pancreatic cancer, and my brother and I were able to be there with her by her side the whole time. And so literally, like, I was there until my mother took her last breath.
Yeah.
And as hard as that is something I will never, ever get over and watch. And so we wondering, like, why would I want to experience that again? But why would I want my brother to be by himself? Like, I even tell people, it didn't even matter whether I was there or not. I just wanted somebody to be there. If my sister-in-law if they would have just allowed her to be there,
right,
I just would have felt a little more comfort in that he was not by himself.
Again, right now, you're here courageously speaking on a podcast and sharing your brother's story, speaking for so many others. This is another point that I know it was just simply profound, the feeling that our loved ones, died alone. I happen to be a person of faith, so I don't believe that anyone dies alone. But it's not the same as what you're talking about. And I really want to, like, you know, again, if I were there, I'd just be holding your hand, you know, and sending you love for this. I told my guests before the show started that, you know, anybody might cry and it might be okay. So now it's me. So Raynell, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing Tony with us and his kids. I want to wish all of them the best, and especially his son, who's going to be graduating from high school. That's such a beautiful, amazing thing. And Tony really is so proud of that.
Yes, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks absolutely.
So much for having me.
You're very welcome. I'll look forward to seeing you again soon. Take good care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Barry, I don't know if I can continue. This is so hard. Oh God, help me. Thank you so much, Barry, for joining us today in this conversation. Thank you for being here. And
thank you for having all of us on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanna invite you to share anything you want to share with us about Rose, your mom.
I just want to start off with sharing a picture. There's mom.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So my mom, Rose, was a fighter. She was a strong personality. She told it like it was, and she most definitely let you know her opinion. You know, quite vivacious personality. My mom had was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer and had it for 10 years and went into remission, which is unheard of. And when she called me and told me that she went into remission, I didn't believe her. And right away it was, with her strong personality, well, if you don't believe me, call the oncologist. And I did. He confirmed it. So, you know, that was just my mother and her, you know, well, go ahead. So for 2 years, she's in remission. She's doing well. She was living in a nursing home at that point only because of her lymphedema from having the cancer, and she had some mobility issues. Her faculties were all intact. She had her wits about her, but I couldn't get her support in the home. And that's why she was at a nursing home. She had started there at skilled nursing, and then she ended up having to stay there. I was not able to get in touch with my mom for about 2 days and called the nursing home because I couldn't get in touch with her on her cell phone. And I'm told that, and this is during the lockdown, and prior to the phone conversation, I had seen her at the nursing home, our last visit together. Nurse comes in to give my mom her meds. Nurse isn't wearing PPE, and it was just right at the beginning of everything. And I'm having this conversation with my mom about the seriousness of COVID and, you know, this virus that came out. And my mom's like, COVID schmovid. You're just so sensitive about things. Well, COVID schmovid took her life. And, you know, as I was saying, you know, I call the nursing home and I say, I can't get in touch with my mom on her cell phone. And I'm told that, well, she was belligerent and it took several individuals to get her into bed and they had to put her on oxygen, 5 liters of oxygen. Well, my mom was never on oxygen and nobody can explain to me why. And then I talked to one of the staff there, both my mom and I were close with, who calls me from her personal cell and says, Barry, I'm afraid she's going to die here. She's incoherent. Something's really wrong. If I can get you in here, and this is during the lockdown, can you come? Absolutely. And I get special permission and I get into the nursing home. And, you know, I don't mean to insult anybody by my statement, but my mom respectfully is exhibiting signs as if she had a stroke, but she didn't have a stroke. Her words are not forming correctly. My mom, who had a extreme vocabulary, is now, when I say to her, mom, you need to go to the hospital, I know go. And so her words are not correct. She can't hold a cup. She's spilling it on herself. And after much debate, I step out, I grab a cup of coffee, I walk back in, and she's looking at me confused as if, what am I doing there? You don't remember me being here? You don't remember our interaction? I say to the nurse, we're done. Oh, you want me to call the doctor? We're done. And at that point, I had them call 911. Mm-hmm. She ends up, the EMTs come in full hazard.
Yeah.
And she has 101 temperature. They take her to the hospital and I'm not allowed in. And it's the longest 20 minutes of my life as I sit in the parking lot. And I find that, she has sepsis, COVID, and pneumonia. For the next couple days, 2 days, she's in the hospital in the emergency room. Friday, that was Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, she has a conversation with me, which doesn't make much sense. Saturday and Sunday, she's back to my mom, back to baseline. We have a normal conversation. Monday, I get a phone call that I need to hurry up to the hospital. This is it. You need to hurry up and make decisions. I go running to the hospital. So I, unlike a lot of people, had the opportunity to see my mom in the hospital.
I see. That's interesting. Yeah.
And I go running up there and they want me to make a decision to end my mom's life. and I threw a window, a small window, because it had been a cardiac floor that was converted into a COVID floor.
Yep.
I refuse. I need to be in there and see my mom. So they put me in full PPE. I go into the room and my mom acts like my mom. Full language, as if I'm talking to you, just like I'm talking to you.
Hmm.
Mom, you're not in pain? No. You're having any trouble breathing? No. And I can't rationalize what kind of decision I'm supposed to make, because just like I'm talking to you, I'm talking to her.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to me. And I'm in there a while with her and I pull out my cell phone and she FaceTimes with my daughter and my dogs and my mother-in-law, and she's fine. By all accounts, she's fine. And I go downstairs and I call her family doctor and he pulls her stats and says, Barry, I wouldn't do a damn thing, pardon my language, but even her stats presented fine. Tuesday, I get a phone call from the doctor at the hospital that, you know, I need to again make a decision. What kind of decision do you want me to make? And every couple hours, I'm calling the hospital and her stats are the same. And Wednesday morning, I get a call. She's a little antsy. Can we give her some Ativan? Are we talking end of life? No, just a little bit. She just seems a little antsy. Okay. And then I get a call on a video chat, just like I'm talking to you. I'm on with one of my coworkers, and I get a phone call on my cell phone. And, oh, just give me a minute. It's the hospital. They probably just, you know, wanted to check on something. Hi, Barry. We're sorry to tell you your mom died. As if past the salt. No sympathy, no empathy, no emotion to it. And I'm going, what? Take it back. You can't say that to me.
Mm.
It's repeated to me. And I literally fall on the floor because it doesn't make sense to me. Because
right.
48 hours ago, I saw her and she was fine.
Mm.
And that's what people don't understand, that fast things can change.
Mm. I'm a little bit speechless. I don't know what to say, you know, but this reveals, like I was saying to the others, something that is so important. It's one of the reasons that I created a podcast, is to have conversations and to archive them. And it reveals the experience that you had. And that is the most important thing that we're sharing here, because there will be people who hear this conversation, Barry, who hear what you just shared. And they're going to be like, damn, that's exactly what happened to me. And they're going to feel a little bit less alone. I just want to say, I'm sorry for your loss. And I can tell your mother was amazing. I could feel the energy of her strong personality. So, yeah, and I know she was close to your daughter as well. Barry, my heart is with you.
Thank you.
I want to say I'm sending you love for your own strength, for your own soul connection and soul protection as you continue to face what it is that you have to go through in grief and life. So I want to say thank you so much for joining me today, Barry, and to the others as well. The book is Voices 19, Their Legacies Live On. You can be sure that we will be posting a link to buy the book in the comments of the various platforms that you're seeing this on. And we want to ask you, buy the book, because when you buy the book and read the stories, you help us honor the legacy of those past in the book, but also you might have opportunity to have conversation with your own loved ones about people you've lost to COVID. All right, friends, that does it for this episode of Authors Who Inspire. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Thank you, Barry, Raynell, and Rosie. Wishing you all the very best. Take good care.